Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Last night in the playoffs, the Celtics did not play well. I listened to Sean Grandy and Cedric Maxwell on the radio driving back last night on the Celtics network. You can tell they went, I think, 3-4 minutes in the fourth quarter, didn't score a point. They still won the game by 13. They had a 17-point lead at one point. The closest Cleveland got at any point after that was 9. Celtics eventually got it out to 21 and won by 13 on a night where they shot 36%. Now, I didn't see it, but it sounded like everybody's entitled to have this, but LeBron James did not have a typical LeBron James night, even though he had a double-double. So Game 6 is tomorrow night. People are wondering whether, look, he's logged a lot of minutes. A lot of minutes. I believe he is 2 minutes away from the most playoff minutes he's ever logged. And, of course, that was, 2011, 2012, when he went to the NBA Finals. So he's logged a lot of minutes. Now, you know he'll summon up some whatever reserve he has for the next game, but he doesn't get a lot of help. And Tyronn Lue did not coach a very good game last night. He keeps leaving J.R. Smith in the game, where I'm not even sure in a pickup game of the rec league in Selinsgrove Grove would take him right now. And he left Kyle Korver on the bench and gave some confusing mumbo-jumbo answer as to why he left Korver on the bench. Well, when Ogilvy comes in, we put him in. It's like, no, hey, he's your guy. You can put him in whenever you want. Because Brad Stevens didn't play Ogilvy last night. Well, you can expect Korver to play a lot in Game 6. And then Houston and Golden State tonight. And then our play-by-play call of the day. The Capitals get to the Stanley Cup Final.
With a puck along the right-hand side, and for Callahan, a hit at center as Kunitz was hit shoulder-to-shoulder by Tom Wilson, ahead on the right side, and now Kuznetsov across to Ovechkin. He scores! He scores! 1 minute and 2 seconds into Game 7. The Great Eight has made it 1-0 Washington! And that is going to do it! Good morning! Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Tampa Bay! The Washington Capitals are the 2017-2018 Eastern Conference Champions! Viva Las Vegas! The Capitals are going to T-Mobile Arena Monday night, Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. This improbable run, this magical spring, lives on into the month of June. Unbelievable.
And did Braden pick a good time to pitch 2 shutouts, his first 2 of the year? Not a bad time to do it.
Talk about Braden Holtby, back-to-back shutouts. I believe he shut out Tampa Bay over the last 7 periods of play. So, they're in the Cup Final. If you're NBC, you're probably pretty happy. With all due respect to Winnipeg and Tampa Bay, Washington and with Ovechkin, and Vegas with the fact that it is Vegas and it's an expansion team, it's a pretty good matchup for them. All right. So, the recruiting rules are a little different now. And last weekend was a great spurt of news for Penn State recruiting. The next great spurt of news might be around the weekend of June 8th. Mark it down. All right, that might be the next spurt. That's interesting. With that, we bring in Ryan Sunday. Now, look, Ryan, okay, we had a little trouble as to what time we're going to get him because a lot of it was centered around the baby as to when the baby was going to nap. So, Ryan, welcome. Great to have you with us.
He's actually awake, but he's happy. I'm giving you at least 5 minutes. Hopefully we can get 10 or more, but he's happy and playing on his mat. So rattle him off, Steve. I don't know how much time we've got, my friend.
All right, so let's get to it here. And whatever you can't answer, I'm sure the baby can take care of.
Oh, he's already an expert.
Explain to everybody, first of all, about the new recruiting rules, and which then led to a flurry over the weekend of activity.
Yeah, of course. So the big change, really, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people are familiar with the early signing period and you know, what took place back in December and, you know, how that's impacted what is normally signing day. I think a lot of people are familiar with that now. But the big change that we're seeing this spring now is that between the beginning of April and into the end of June, which would be the second, this year ends on June 24th, but it's always the last Sunday or last Wednesday? I forget the exact day, but long story short, it goes like 3.5 weeks throughout June. Junior prospects are allowed to take official visits now, which was never the case in previous years. You know, you always had to wait until the beginning of September, and you can only take official visits during the season. And this is a big, big game changer in so many different ways. Just to start, I love this rule. I think this is a very good thing for prospects and coaches. Now, I will say it does make things a little busier for guys like Coach Franklin and them. And I don't personally, I mean, I know how hard those guys work. I think a lot of Penn State fans understand that those guys are incredibly hard workers. So it does cut back on family time and stuff, and that's unfortunate. But it also really helps a lot of kids from inner cities and you know, just places that the guys that don't have the means to travel all over the country get out and explore and see these schools before a lot of them fill up. And that's a big thing that we've been seeing a lot of through the last couple of years is, you know, a lot of quality players just didn't have the means to travel, you know, lost out on opportunities because they just couldn't get out to schools and visit. So, long story short, we've seen a ton of official visitors come through since the beginning of April. Penn State had almost a dozen. I think they had 10 for the blue-white game alone. We'll have more official visitors to talk about throughout June. And because of that, we haven't seen the amount of commitments throughout February, March, and April that you normally see. You know, especially I think Penn State fans have gotten used to, you know, seeing not a dozen or so, but, you know, a good handful, a half dozen to up to 10 or so, you know, committed by, you know, whatnot. Well, now, again, because of these official visits, prospects were slowing things down. You know, they wanted to take advantage of their trips, you know, use some of them. And, you know, these are a lot of the same kids that probably would have made commitments a few months ago, but, you know, that took a few extra visits. So, you know, because of that, that kind of led to what you saw this past weekend. You know, a lot of those guys had to get to Penn State or to a couple other schools in recent months, but, you know, we always kind of knew the Nittany Lions were the favorites with most of these guys, and, you know, it just kind of led to a surge that I think we could possibly see again throughout June, depending on how some things land. So I think this is a good change. It's made a lot of fans impatient. A lot of fans wanted to see commitments a few months ago, but it leads to fun weekends like that for Penn State fans, and it's going to pay off for a long time.
Sometimes an initial surge out of the gate can really set a tone for a class. What kind of surge did Penn State get on this particular weekend, and what kind of tone can it set?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, to land a five-star running back, to land one of the best linebacker prospects that I've seen, and not just this year, but we're talking about for quite some time. Well, I mean, Penn State did land a Micah Parsons last year, so let's put that in perspective. But, I mean, Brandon Smith is a heck of a player. But, you know, one thing I just want to say about the whole group, Tyler Rudolph, Marquise Wilson, Brandon Smith, Devin Ford, and to a lesser extent, Jaquan Brisker, because he's a junior college prospect, but mainly the four guys that have just committed are all very well connected with a lot of other guys that Penn State's going after. Tyler Rudolph will be the first to tell you that he's good friends with John Metchie. You know, Devin Ford will be the first to tell you that he's good friends with Cameron Kelly, who's about to commit in the beginning of June. So from that perspective, it's really going to help Penn State because now they have a solid base of friends that are already on board. But again, you know, even for guys that maybe aren't as close with some of the committed players, you know, just landing top elite players and gaining that notoriety over a week stretch, where, you know, school's letting out, guys are about to start planning more visits for June, it's a perfect time really for Penn State to have that notoriety. I mean, you go to Rivals right now, which is my site, we've got a ton of different stories, you know, from national people talking about Penn State. You know, it's the same if you go to 247 or a lot of other places. You know, a lot of national writers are paying attention to Penn State right now, and when you see that, you know, you're grabbing the attention of high school coaches and players all across the country. So this is a great time for that to happen, and on top of that, again, a lot of these guys that just joined are good friends with a bunch of players that are thinking about committing in June and July. So we may see. I know we're going to see more commitment in the coming weeks. Whether it's a surge and they all come at once, maybe that could happen again. But if not, we're going to definitely see a handful more.
Ryan, obviously, everyone will have their own reasons as to why they ended up saying yes to a certain place and verbally committing. Was there a common thread that you found among the guys that have verbally committed so far that you're saying, well, that's the same story I heard from X, Y, and Z in terms of the common threads?
The coaching staff always is the first thing. And I think that's a common thing for 3-4 years now. I mean, James Franklin and his staff, not only are they just great recruiters, everybody knows that. I mean, they're some of the best in the country. But they just, guys, it's a younger staff, and they just know how to relate. And I can never stress that enough. But Penn State has had incredible recruiters over the past decade, two decades. I mean, Penn State has always, you know, let's be honest, the school sells itself in a lot of ways. But this staff in particular just really knows how to, not just even with the college students, but with coaches, with their parents. They just always strike that right chord that really just grabs people's attention. And it really, it's not even just the local guys. I mean, they're really, from a national perspective, they're really grabbing guys' attention in California and Texas and Florida. And that just shows that, again, you know, if you want to be a great recruiter, you know how to build relationships. You know how to speak with people. You know how to build trust, which is so extremely important. And that's one thing we've just seen with all these recent guys. But, you know, if you go individually, I mean, a guy like Brandon Smith is an incredibly bright young man. Academics were huge for someone like him. I mean, they're important for all these guys, but Brandon in particular is just a really bright guy. I think Penn State fans are going to get to love this guy because he just stands for all the right things, and he's a perfect fit for what this university is. So, you know, Devin Ford, obviously, you know, we saw what Saquon Barkley did and, you know, the different ways they use the offense. So, you know, they all have their individual reasons, but if there's that one thing I always come back to, it's just the fact that this recruiting or this staff, it's not just they know how to recruit, they know how to build trust, and they're real with guys. I mean, they tell it like it is. They don't beat around the bush and then get caught in a lie 3 weeks later.
Now let's push it to another part. The coaching staff, James Franklin's a great recruiter. He has a lot of great recruiters on his staff. How much does it help when you have players that are recruiting for you too? And I'm talking about the current players. I'm not talking about the prospects.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. You know, I'm trying to think who it was. Caden Wallace. He committed a little while back. He committed Blue White Weekend. But I had a good talk with him about how the early enrollees, Zach Koontz and I think it was Nick Tarburton. I forget. Maybe it was Jesse Licata. I forget which one. I know Koontz was one of them. But long story short, he was saying about how, you know, he had a good 15-20-minute talk with those guys about how, you know, enrolling early and how it helped them and you know, how it really you know, just kind of opened Caden's eyes to, you know, how that could benefit him. And I think that Penn State does a really good job at setting up these prospects with some of the up-and-coming freshmen who are social skills are up there. I don't have a better way to put that. But, you know, guys that know how to relate to players and know how to, not going to say sell, but, you know, they understand what these guys are looking for, and they do a peer-to-peer perspective. That makes a little more sense. You know, they always do that on official visits. You know, you see guys like CJ Thor posting guys on official visits all the time. We can go through a whole list of bright, young, mature players that know how to really show some of the younger guys not only just a good time, but show them the important things on campus. But yeah, I really always come back to Caden, though, because Caden was just so impressed with Zach Koontz and those guys and how they've transitioned and how they've enjoyed their time here and how it's been so beneficial to them. That's a really good example from this class. And, you know, I'm sure Devin and you know, Brandon Smith and all the guys that were just on campus could give you better examples. But, the one talk I had with Caden really stands out to me.
Well, I have to give the baby credit. Very good the entire time.
He's playing with his little, I don't even know what it is, little mat with these hanging things. It's great. He's happy. I'm happy. I'm happy we got this in.
Well done. Well done. I'm not sure who was the bigger star, your information or the fact that he was so good.
Probably the baby, let's be honest.
It always is, every time. Ryan, thanks so much. Appreciate it, and we appreciate you squeezing us in today.
It'll be a busy June 8th weekend, Steve. Reach out to me then. It's going to be a busy weekend. We'll talk about it then.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ryan.
Take care, guys.
Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated, Rivals.com. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Wall Street Journal did a rather interesting and long piece on, and here's the title, How a Weakened ESPN Became Consumed by Politics. They say in the subtitle then was arguments over tweets, tension with owner Disney, increased anxiety over the network's future in an era of cord cutting. And Shalini Ramchandran is the one that wrote this. And it turns out, you know, it talks about some of the tweets that Jemele Hill put out and how it created problems for John Skipper and so forth. They have a series of charts. And it shows that cumulative change in ESPN subscribers since the beginning of 2011, 101 million. They are now down 17 million since. 17 million. Operating profit. They're back to about the same level they were in operating profit in 2011. But that also means that in this eight-year span, this year and last year equal the first year, and that means they're behind because then their operating profit in 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16 was much higher. Disney's cable operating profit, okay, has dropped this year and the year before, like in the negative. Fees per monthly cable bill each year have gone higher for both ESPN and ESPN2. ESPN in 2011 was at $4 plus. ESPN2 was at $5 plus. Now it is $8 and almost $9 for ESPN and ESPN2 in 7 years. They talk about overpaying. Let's see, Linda Cohn had done an interview in April 2017
And in her interview, she said that politics were pushing viewers away and the network had overpaid for NBA rights. She, too, got called into the office by John Skipper, according to this Wall Street Journal report. And it goes through all of this. You know, not just chart, but you know, how much they're paying now. 8-year cable deal took place in 2014. The rights went up 82%. NBA rights up 203%. Major League Baseball rights up 100%. College football playoff 317%. ACC up 55%. This is how much more they're paying. SEC up 52%. Pac-12 up 400%. U.S. Open Tennis Championship up 275%. MLS up 375% in rights. Average daily viewers primetime up over 20 million until 2016. Now closer to 15 million. All day, up over a million, now down to about 600,000. SportsCenter, 6 p.m., fell like a rock. Over 9 million viewers in 2010, dropped down last year to 4 million.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
You know, when we were at the golf tournament, the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, it was great to be with Craig. Great to be with the Chief. You were out there. Matt Catrillo was there. I felt like we were done after 18 holes with a suit. I kind of felt he espoused a flat earth. Didn't you think?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's accurate.
Yeah. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. From this Wall Street Journal article on ESPN. And look, ESPN, and I said this 2 or 3 years ago? Somewhere, right? You can correct me on that, how far back I went with this. But I said that ESPN was going to be a fascinating case study on where it all went wrong. About 3 years, I think it's about three, four years ago I said that they were going to be a great case study on where it all went wrong. Now, let's be fair here. Are they turning profits in beyond words? They absolutely are. They're turning profits in the billions. Okay, their operating profit is in the billions. That's successful. Now, Disney's cable operating profit is way down. They are losing subscribers, but 84 million, pretty good. That's not so bad either. So it's not a complete disaster. Are they paying more for rights? There's no question about that. There's no question about it. But they wanted, you know, like they're a sports network. So you want to have the NFL on. That deal runs through 2021, I think. The NBA goes through 2025. Major League Baseball runs through 2022. College football playoff runs through 2026. ACC runs through 2036. Southeastern Conference runs through 2034. Pac-12 runs through 2024. U.S. Open Tennis Championship runs through 2026. And the MLS runs through 2023. Now, in the end, when we get to those respective years, maybe we'll find out that these were very smart deals and that they saved themselves some money by doing it when they did. But And I'm going to quote this directly from the Wall Street Journal article, and it's under the line of flat earthers. It says, turmoil in the sports powerhouse's business traces back to the spring in 2014. Disney had invited about 100 analysts and investors to ESPN's headquarters in Bristol, Connecticut, to hobnob with talent, including tennis legend John McEnroe, and show off ESPN's new $150 million-plus production facility. In an unusual move, Disney gave long-term financial guidance for its cable networks division, largely powered by ESPN. It was rosy. ESPN's research department presented data arguing cord-cutting was unlikely to become widespread, according to the attendees. Said one former ESPN executive, quote, they were flat earthers. At the same time, ESPN was spending aggressively. The company agreed to triple the fees it would pay the NBA, which it believed was growing in popularity. On the talent side, John Skipper closely managed negotiations, desiring to beat back rivals like Fox Sports 1 and NBC Sports. Agents, former ESPN executives and hosts, said that led him to overpay on several on-air personalities. The Wall Street Journal article continues, by 2015, it became clear the research staff was way off base as ESPN subscriber losses accelerated beyond internal projections. That August, Robert Iger lowered the company's earlier financial guidance, causing a stock sell-off that lopped off more than $20 billion off Disney's market value that week. Iger expressed reservations to John Skipper about ESPN's programming. SportsCenter was flooding the airwaves with many additions and said it wasn't distinguishing itself, a person familiar with the conversation said. ESPN and Disney's finance teams began to quarrel over budgets as the network was told to find cuts. ESPN shaved spending, including by producing games remotely without announcers on site. But changing the culture was challenging. In 2015, the network spent lavishly to beef up its SportsCenter on the road segments, including pouring over $2 million into programming surrounding the Floyd Mayweather-Manny Pacquiao boxing match, well above projections internally. They say for some staffers, it became a symbol of excess. Rob King, I think Rob's a Penn Stater, I believe, the executive in charge of SportsCenter at the time, appointed a senior producer to monitor budgets closely after the episode. A person close to ESPN disputed that spending on the fight overshot internal projections. Some current and former ESPN employees said bloated contracts for talent weighed the company down and led to layoffs. ESPN is still paying many hosts, including Ed Werder. He was on a multi-year contract when he was laid off. A new talk show was launched last month, Get Up. Costs are more than its predecessor, a SportsCenter morning edition, and it's underperforming in the ratings. Payments to the show's talent total some $15 million a year. Mike Greenberg, it says here, makes $6.5 million. I think it's a number everybody knows. Mid-level SportsCenter jobs tend to earn $500,000 a year, said one agent, with better-known SportsCenter anchors making up to $1 million. You know, it's a fascinating article. I mean, that's just one section of it, because it does get into the politics on the air. Now, as you know, I'm not one that gets too caught up in what the personalities say, whether it's on SportsCenter or pregame shows, because I don't watch them. Now, look, do I have a distinct advantage in a lot of ways? Yeah, I mean, I can watch a game. I can figure it out. I don't need Tim Legler to tell me. I've been doing basketball and going to basketball practices 2-3 days a week for almost 40 years. I don't really need your help, okay? So I don't need it. Football? I go to football practices 4 days a week. I've been doing football games for a couple decades. So, you know, if I have any questions, I can ask an expert like a coach. So I don't need to hear like, hey, they do this. Or, who cares? I can figure it out. Now, for other people, they want to get more out of it. And especially maybe now they may want to get more out of it because the market is going to be open for sportsbook. But I haven't watched this stuff in a long time. I want to know what time does the game kick off? What time does the game tip off? What time does the... Okay? I don't care about all the mumbo-jumbo. I don't watch First Take. Now, have I ever seen it? Yes, because sometimes, for example, I'll give you a good example. WPSU Channel 3. There's so many different elements they want to record to use. For example, if the NBA Combine, they wanted to get everything they could about Tony Carr. So the TV is that they're recording off of and has the sound up is about 15 feet away from me. So yes, I've seen First Take. Okay. I mean, a lot of arguing and yelling. Okay, I got it. It's opinion. And, you know, people are entitled to their opinions. I have no problem with that. I'm also entitled not to listen to it. Because I don't want to. It is the Sports Center, SE6. I never once saw that show. Now, I did see it with the sound down when we were doing the Permane show, because they've got all the TVs on all over the place. So, I mean, I saw them sitting on the set, but never heard a word they said. But I never saw that show. Every once in a great while, late at night, I'll watch Scott Van Pelt. But to me, when I watch ESPN, I'm all about watching the game. And I'll tell you something else I do watch in ESPN. I want to be fair about this. I also watch some of the 30 for 30s, I think, which are very, very well done. What about you? What do you do, Sean? What do you watch?
I like the 30 for 30s. They're very good. There was a time it'd be an appointment viewing for me when I was a lot younger. I'd catch the late Sports Center before going to bed. And lately I would do the same thing. I'll check in with SVP. You know, if I know it's a huge game and if I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of it, I'd flip over to ESPN for Van Pelt. I miss the sports reporters. I mean, I'm kind of old school. I love that Sunday morning show, that half hour show, which has now been replaced for a more in-depth weekly E60 show. It used to be that show would be on like Tuesday, Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock, like especially during the time of the year when they wouldn't have a midweek Major League Baseball game. They'd plunk in E60. But I loved the sports reporters. I'm a Kornheiser fan. I don't watch as much PTI as I used to because I'm in the car when the first show runs at 5:30. So sometimes I'll catch a replay of that on one of the other ESPN channels. They'll replay it a couple of times later on in the night. I'll check that out if there's not a game on that I want to see. But it seems to me ESPN, after a certain point of time, maybe it would be 6 months, 9 months, it just seems like they have to hit the reset button and try to reinvent themselves maybe when it comes to a new show here and there. And maybe they're just trying too hard. They just go back to the basics.
Right.
But I guess their concern is if they give you too much basics, too many hours of the day, that it's boring and not a lot of people are going to tune in.
Right. They're trying to do as much content as possible. I understand that. Around the Horn, PTI, Outside the Lines, the NFL live show every day. So they're trying to do as, you know, rolling through with some regular content every day. But according to Nielsen data, which was, by the way, provided by ESPN through May 6th, the average daily viewers of ESPN in 2013 was up over 20 million, increased in 14, went down in 15, slight rise in 17, real sharp downturn in 18. They've lost about 5 million viewers in prime time in 5 years. All day has been a steady downturn since 2013. Stayed level in 14, started sliding down from about a million to maybe, looks like 600,000, 700,000, somewhere in that range.
I'm really curious. I'm also really curious to see. And obviously, we'll get a better gauge on it 6, 9, 12 months down the road, this new ESPN Plus that they just unveiled within the last month or so, where you pay $4.95 a month to catch bonus content on your smartphone or on your tablet that they won't put on TV.
Yeah, why? Why would you want that? Why? I mean, I'm already paying. I'm paying for cable already. Okay? Be a cable network.
And the funny part is when they launched that a little over a month ago, the first thing that they put on ESPN Plus was the debut of a 30 for 30 episode. And it's like, right. Oh man, it's like if that was a subject that I'd love to watch, that I'd really be into seeing, I mean, I would have been upset. It's like, oh man, I got to pay $5 to see that.
It was the Bob Knight story.
Yeah.
Let's see. Monday Night Football, 15 million viewers in 2010. Has slid back to, it looks about 10 million in 18. NBA regular season in 10 went up in 11. Good sharp turn upward to 2 million viewers for an NBA regular season game. Then slid back down in 15 to 1.5. Now it's about 1.6 million. So it's gone up slightly. And the biggest one has been the Sports Center at 6. In 2010, they averaged about 900,000 viewers. And then at the end of last year, it was about 450,000. The audience had been cut in half. And I mean, now, the interesting part is they made the changes, moved certain people out, and went back to a traditional Sports Center. And the ratings have gone up slightly in 18.
I just got a text from the suit. He brings up a great point about ESPN Goal Line. If you're not familiar with ESPN Goal Line, it's just like NFL Red Zone, where they'll hop and they'll hip hop from college game to college game. And once a team gets into the red zone, they'll stick with that game in a while. And they also do the same for what's called ESPN Bases Loaded. I wonder if there's going to come a point where they're going to charge you to have that in your home too.
All right, here's the issues with both of them and why neither one of them works. Okay? Red Zone works because of fantasy football. All right? Goal Line doesn't work because there isn't fantasy college football. I mean, I've got every game on TV that I want. I mean, there's some fantasy college football. There's some fantasy baseball, but that doesn't even work. I mean, I can go to MLB Network, get the same coverage. Right? I mean, last I checked, ESPN is now using Rose and Millar from MLB Network because they dropped Baseball Tonight. Or at least they dropped it down to one night a week.
Yeah, last I heard they were simulcasting that MLB Network show on ESPN2.
I mean, Goal Line and the baseball thing are nice, except here's the issue. What's the market for it? Now, Red Zone does extremely well. Why? Because in a market that includes DraftKings, FanDuel, and now is going to include legalized sportsbook in many states, is going to have, continues to have an audience. See, that's, you know, you can get almost any college game you want. Right? I mean, every day where you turn around, there's a college game on. Everywhere. Right? The NFL, you get three games. Or during the course of the week, you'll get, see, was the NFL, say they got a full week, they got 16 games. We have access to Thursday, Monday, that's two, and then four games on Sunday. So six out of the 16. Red Zone takes care of the other 10. Every Big Ten game you can see on TV, every one of them. See, there's no market for it. It's a great supplement, but there's no market. People aren't going to pay for that. Why should I bother paying for that when I can watch any game I want? Right? And the other part, too, about baseball, we've become very provincial as to how we watch TV now. All right? The Phillies are on every night. And if you get in the car to go to the store, you've got WKOK. The Pirates are on every night. So we're very provincial in our viewing. And I've mentioned this how many times now, where Phillies fans can tell you everything chapter and verse about every player on their team. Every one of them. From Franco to Hoskins to Arrieta, they can tell you chapter and verse on every single one of them. But unlike when I was growing up, we seem to know a little bit about everybody. They can't tell you much of anything about the San Diego Padres. Until they watch a couple of games and see them playing against the Phillies. So we've become very provincial in it. That's why he mentions that. But what's the market for either one? There isn't really a market for either one. There really is not a market. We're very provincial in our baseball watching. College football, all those games are already on. They're all of them on. Now, the NFL Red Zone's different because of FanDuel, DraftKings, local fantasy leagues, and the fact that only six of the 16 games are on TV in a weekend. There are 10 that aren't televised. See? Big difference.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.